Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 5th, 2009. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, don't have room to grow hops at your house? Think again. Chris Colby of Brew Your Own Magazine joins us to revisit growing hops in containers. Chris has refined his hop container technique with an interesting approach to trellis design. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Our 2009 Brewers Logbooks, still in stock. The logbooks have a calendar in the front to track your brews and space to log the details of 50 brewing sessions in the back. You can check them out on our online store at basicbrewingshop.com. And thanks to everybody who's clicking on our Amazon.com associate link on our Basic Brewing site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show. And as usual, we appreciate your support. Well, things are slowly getting back to normal around Northwest Arkansas following the massive ice storm that barreled through here, causing the biggest power outage in the state's history. Steve Wilkes and his family finally got power back last night, a week after it went out. So we're happy for that. Now, I've gotten notes from folks up in Kentucky where it was bad there too, so I hope everything is in better shape in your neck of the woods this week. I have more news from the homebrewing legislation front. I figure since this has become a regular feature on the show, it should have its own music. So, from the Basic Brewing News Team, here's an update on the legislation to legalize homebrewing in Utah. Douglas Wierzynski writes in with this. HB 51 is currently in the hands of the Senate Business and Labor Committee. It is yet to be placed on an agenda for a specific meeting, but we are writing the committee to encourage them to schedule the bill for a meeting and give it fair consideration. Four of the seven members of the Senate Business and Labor Committee were on the Interim Business and Labor Committee that gave the bill a favorable recommendation in November. Douglas says if we can expect the senators who voted on the bill in November to vote the same way again, we can expect three favorable votes and one nay. That leaves three members of the Senate committee, all of whom are Republican, whose votes we don't necessarily know because they've never voted directly on the issue. Douglas says in order to get a majority vote for a favorable recommendation from this committee, in addition to the three anticipated favorable votes, we need at least one of the three remaining senators to vote favorably. I don't know much about these senators, Douglas says, so I can't begin to guess how they will vote. All I can say is it's very exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing how all this turns out. Us too. Good luck, Douglas, and good luck to everybody else across the country who's trying to bring sensible legislation into law in regards to beer and brewing. Let's take a look in the mailbag. I need some music for that, too. Maybe next week. Dawn from New Jersey writes, I received a wort chiller for Christmas. It's the greatest thing since sliced bread, as I'm sure you are already aware. But I've noticed that when I clean it, there always seems to be water left in the coils and tubing. Is there a way to hang the coils to drain them? What's the best way that you have found to dry the coils and tubing? I'm afraid there may be something wanting to live in the damp darkness, and they might accidentally leach into my beer. Yes, I do sanitize everything when brewing, but I cannot see into the coils. The tubing, I know, can be replaced easily, but I would prefer not to do it all the time. I may just be a little paranoid, but Felix Unger could have been my friend. Well, Don, I'm assuming that this is an immersion chiller and not a counterflow chiller. That's a whole different story. If you've got a good seal between your copper tubing and the hoses leading to and from your immersion chiller, you shouldn't have to worry about what's inside, frankly. That's the beauty of an immersion chiller. You just pop it into the kettle the last 15 minutes of the boil so that it, you know, gets boiled and everything inside and outside the the immersion chiller will be sterilized anyway, so it really doesn't matter what's inside there. And if your seals are working properly, your chiller water shouldn't touch your wort anyway. But there is a bigger danger than infection from having water left over in the chiller, though, in an immersion chiller. When you put the chiller into the boiling wort to sterilize it, any water left over in that chiller will boil, and it could send steam and hot water shooting out of the ends of the hoses there. And that can burn you, or at least make a mess, so you want to be careful there. What I do is this. After I get finished chilling, I hold the output hose high in the air above my head, and then I disconnect the input hose from the faucet and lay it into the sink. And since the kettle is right next to the sink on the counter when I chill, this creates a siphon that draws almost all the water out, and I hardly have any problems that way. If that doesn't work for you, you can also hold the chiller sideways and kind of roll it, you know, rotating it, causing the water to go through the coils of the chiller until it runs out one side or the other. It'll make sense once you try. Dawn, I agree. I'm a bit of a Felix Unger myself when it comes to brewing, and I'd say that's a good thing. By the way, Dawn adds, in the last three videos, I noticed you and Steve had the same shirts on. How many videos did you shoot on that day? The answer is three. That was a good day. Matt from Syracuse, New York writes, in preparation for bottling, I needed to go to my local homebrew store for bottle caps. I had a choice between the standard caps and the oxygen-absorbing caps. Since I strive for my beer to taste as good as possible, I went with the slightly pricier oxygen-absorbing ones. My only concern was that I think I remember reading online somewhere that it's a bad idea to sanitize the oxygen-absorbing caps because it reduces the oxygen-absorbing properties. Is this true? Well, Matt, I haven't heard that about oxygen caps. The only thing I can think of is that some brewers have boiled their caps to sanitize them, or actually sterilize them, I guess. This is not a good idea in general because you risk damaging the rubber seal inside. So maybe that's what you're thinking of. But as far as I know, I think as long as you sanitize with iodophore or Starsan or whatever you generally use as a sanitizer, I think you'll be okay. And if I'm not thinking right out there, if you're out there and you're thinking you know better, please let me know. You can contact me at james@basicbrewing.com or use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from and be sure to check your email address. And if you write me, make sure that you put me on your list of non-spammers so that the note doesn't get lost in a spam folder somewhere. Okay, last year I had Chris Colby on the program to talk about planting and growing hops, and for part of that discussion we talked about planting hops in containers, which he's done for a while. Coming up in the next issue of Brew Your Own magazine, Chris has written an article on container hops, so I thought it'd be a good opportunity to have him on to flesh out the topic a little bit more and to take your questions from Twitter. Well, Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about growing hops in containers, and we've got some questions from Twitter this time, and we want to talk about your new design for an adjustable hop trellis to go in the container. We visited if you want more information on this, you can look in our archives. I think it was in April of last year. We did an episode on growing hops in general and talked about a bit about growing hops in containers. And you wrote an article about growing hops in containers for this issue of Brew Your Own, so I wanted to revisit it and kind of flesh it out more completely. But let's start off with a little bit of revisiting the basics. Why would you want to grow hops in containers as opposed to putting them in the ground?
Well, if you have a suitable space to grow hops in ground, that's what you'd want to go with first off. You know, if they're somewhere where they're going to get the right sun and you can put a nice trellis, you know, that's what you'd want to do. But, you know, not everyone has that option. If you're living somewhere where you don't own the house or you're in an apartment or, you know, there can be any number of reasons why you just can't plant in-ground hops, but you might have a place where you could plant them in a container. The first reason that, you know, anybody plants anything in a container is just because, you know, their situation sort of forces them that onto them.
And you've been doing it for quite a while successfully, haven't you?
About 4 years, yeah. I've got a big in-ground garden on the side of my house, and I've got a row of like 8 or 9 hop plants in-ground there. But I also, every year, I've been planting tomatoes for like 10 years. I've been planting tomatoes and stuff in containers in my garden. And for the past 4 years, I've been planting also hop plants.
Well, let's just jump right into the questions, because thanks to the Twitter followers out there. And you're on Twitter now, too, aren't you?
I'm on Twitter now. Yeah, it's, what is it, Colby Brewery, I think.
Yeah, Colby Brewery. So, yeah. Are you enjoying the Twitter?
Yeah, I sort of at first didn't get it. Like, you know, I'm supposed to just say what I'm doing at random. Who cares?
Yeah.
But now I sort of get it, because it's, you know, you can see, just scroll through a couple times a day and see what, you know, people have been talking about. And, yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I noticed you were Twittering last night while you were brewing.
Yeah.
You're not very detailed with your recipe as you're doing it. That's one thing that I do is when I'm brewing, I actually, you know, say in goes 2 ounces of this kind of hops now, you know. So you might want to think about that. I get a lot of questions. You know, did you show us your recipe? So anyway,
yeah. I usually put like the full information on my BYO blog.
So
I've sort of been using Twitter as just the, you know, blast out the basics, and then my blog gives the, I always try to throw up the recipe there.
And you can find the blog at byo.com?
Yeah, it's right on the front page, actually. You can either click on blogs, which brings them all up, or the most current couple are sort of in the center of the page.
Cool. Matt from Middle Tennessee says, what kind of yield should we expect from container-grown hops, and do certain varieties perform better in containers? You know, should we consider dwarf varieties?
Dwarf varieties, that's something I hadn't even thought of. That's might be a good, you know, good avenue to pursue. As far as yield, I mean, I'm limited by the fact that I've only grown like 8 or 9 different varieties in containers, and so I don't, you know, can't just go down the list of every single hop and say this one does good and bad. You know, I found that the standard American hops that, you know, grow well here in the ground also grow well in containers. Cascade, Centennial, Chinook, Nugget. I've actually got some Northern Brewer to go, pretty good. You know, it would take a lot more growing both in the ground and in containers, and a lot more comparisons to really say, you know, anything specific with regards to different varieties. But if you can get it to grow, or if you people can get it to grow in the ground in your region well, you certainly should be able to grow it well in a container. And for yield, you do get less hops because you prune for less above ground growth. But certainly, I mean, they're, you know, as ornamentation, they look great. And for brewing, you certainly, even a single plant, you're going to get more than enough to brew, you know, you're going to be able to get at least a batch of hoppy beer out of it, if not a couple. And then, you know, of course, if you plant multiple plants, you'll have, you know, all the hops you want, really.
Jamie from Charlottesville, Virginia asks, does the lack of growing a huge root system hurt the hops?
In the article coming out in BYO, that's what I go into. You know, the big disadvantage to growing hot plants in a container is that you're almost always, unless the container is just enormous, you're almost always cramping the root system, and that means that the plants have less of an ability to bring in both water and nutrients. In the article in BYO, I go into that, you know, yeah, you are growing them under substandard conditions with regards to cramping the roots, and the article's sort of a then a tiptoe through the the different ways to, you know, ameliorate that condition. Now that you know you're cramping the roots, what do you do with your planting and watering and nutrient additions to, you know, take that into account and make the plant still grow healthy and give you good quality hops?
So you need to pay a lot more attention to the nutrients, since you are cramping the roots, so to speak.
Yeah, you need to pay a lot more attention to everything. It's like, I mean, if you've ever grown like garden vegetables in a container and in a normal garden, you know that, you know, the ones in containers are always drying out. You know, you've got to constantly keep watering them. You know that they're more likely to run out of nutrients and that sort of thing. And the same exact thing applies with hops. You've got to keep them watered. You've got to keep an eye on the nutrient level. The third big thing in the article is you got to limit the amount of above ground growth. So that, you know, there's, you know, roughly the same sort of balance between below ground growth and above ground growth as there would be in a plant where, you know, the roots and rhizomes were free to sprawl.
And you say in the article, don't wait until you see signs of poor hop health before you take proactive action to, you know, to keep the plants healthy and fed well.
Yeah, that's actually, one thing, it's kind of, I don't know, silly to say that in one sense, because, you know, if you don't have any experience, well, how are you know that, you know, how are you going to know before the plant becomes unhealthy? It calls for a little, you know, like, you know, it's like reading a set of instructions and, you know, step five is this and then step six is, but before this, do, you know. So it does take a little experience, but basically, yeah, one of the things in growing above-ground hops is you always want to water it just before it needs water. And in the article, there's actually some ways, or one way to help you know what that is. You also want to give it, you know, a light dose of nutrients, you know, fertilizer sort of right before it needs it. And that you just sort of have to eyeball. You just, you know, you'll learn. A lot of times just knowing, you know, basically how much nutrients the plant is going to use over the year. Just, you know, stagger them so you have a once-a-month addition or a once-every, you know, month-and-a-half addition or something like that.
Can you overdo nutrients, or can you give them the wrong kind of nutrient?
The wrong kind, you're not likely. You know, most, you know, garden centers you go to or nurseries or whatever, you know, they're going to have the standard fertilizer that has the standard set of ingredients. You know, unless you're buying some crazy, you know, some sort of crazy specialty fertilizer for, you know, for something weird. If you're just buying the normal stuff, either a balanced fertilizer, you know, with a NPK of like, you know, 10-10-10 or 13-13-13, or, you know, sometimes there's mixes with better higher nitrogen. Those are all fine. Yeah, you're not likely to get the wrong nutrient, but you certainly can overdo it. You can, in gardening, they just call it burning the plant because, you know, just sort of the roots have to deal with taking in so much of those nutrients that they don't, you know, they'll eventually shrivel and die. So, yeah, one thing I called for in the article is, you know, slow, steady stream of nutrients. You know, I add mine, of course, what, you know, during the watering schedule, just, you know, once a month or so.
Greg asks, do we need to periodically trim the dominant roots and rhizomes? And if so, how often? Because if you've ever looked at the underside of a hop plant, they can get just as crazy down below the ground as they do above the ground.
Yeah, what you'll see is within 2 years, your hop rhizome is going to completely fill the container. You know, in the article, I recommend using either half barrel planters or, you know, a pot that's has a 20 inch diameter. You know, any smaller than that, and you're really going to have sort of excessive problems. But if you get it to that level, a 20 inch diameter planter. You know, it's doable with a little care, you know, especially for someone who's done some gardening. And, yeah, you do have to probably every other year, and I did it this year with four or five of mine, just tip the pot on its side and roll it around in your driveway or wherever until all the potting mix gets loose and falls out, and then just, you know, reach in there and yank out the rhizome. And it's going to be a big, you know, bigger than a basketball size, massive rhizome things. And then just you can. What I did this year is, because I'm doing some experiments with hop growing, is I cut it in half so there was roughly equal weight and then replanted them. But, I mean, if you really want to propagate, after a couple of years, you're going to have enough rhizomes to, you know, you'll be able to cut, I don't even know what number, 20 or 30, maybe, you know, plantable size rhizomes out of something like that.
Mm. And what's the best time of year to do that?
Early spring, you know, sort of right before they, right before they send their above ground shoots. I think they're pretty robust that way. I don't know this for a fact, but I think, you know, you could do it in the fall if you really wanted to. I get the impression that, you know, from the hop rhizome handling that I have done just as a gardener or whatever, I think they're really pretty robust. You know, as long as they don't completely dry out over the winter.
You don't have to worry about being too gentle. I ripped a hop out of the garden and threw it in the compost heap, assuming it would die, and it's quite happy there now.
So
Todd from Tiffin, Ohio asks, how big of a container can you have? You know, you talked about the kind of half barrel size, but can you have a container that's like either long or shallow or short and narrow? Is there a certain shape that's better for the planting?
Okay, the way hop rhizomes grow is they send out lateral, they wouldn't be called shoots, but where lateral growths, you know, they grow flat along the ground, and they also send ones that go down. And if you leave them alone, you know, say below, you know, in an in-ground garden, they end up being a big sort of roughly round-ish mass. You know, they sometimes, you know, there'll be more growth on one side or whatever. It's not perfectly uniform, but basically, I mean, I've never tried growing them in like a tall, thin container or one that's more longer than, and I think you would, you know, I'm not sure what would happen. It would probably, you know, it'd force the growth into the available space, but I'm not sure if that would be good for the plant or not.
Mm.
I use those 20-inch planters, which are basically just like an inch or two smaller than a half-barrel planter. And, you know, they're 20-inch in diameter, then they're probably at least that deep, you know, they taper a little at the bottom. You know, they sort of look like a big, just, you know, flower pot.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I would plant them in something that's sort of roughly, you know, pot shaped, like a big cylinder or a, you know, big globe or, you know, something, at least very, very roughly that way. And, you know, I haven't done it, but I wouldn't try planting them in any sort of odd shaped container.
Both Steve from Worcester, Massachusetts, and Anthony from Redlands, California ask questions along the same line. What's the minimum amount of soil needed? You know, what's the smallest container? Is the 20-inch size the smallest you would go?
The 20-inch diameter, yeah, I've been growing them in that. And that takes about, it takes a little over 2 cubic feet of soil, or about 60 quarts, which is, if you go to a home and garden center, those big, big things of potting mix. It's not an all or nothing thing. It's not as if, you know, if you found a 19-inch diameter planter, your plant would die instantly. Or, you know, a 16-inch, which is a common size. It's just, it gets sort of exponentially harder to grow them the smaller you get. And in the article, I recommend a 20-inch diameter minimum. I mean, I think that's going to be, for most people, you know, you're still going to have to put in some work, but that'll give you a high chance of success. I know a lot of people will probably think that, you know, when you get a rhizome, it's tiny. Maybe I could plant it in a small pot for the first year, you know. But the thing is, they grow quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And a 20-inch diameter planter is, the roots are going to fill that by midway through the first growing season. The rhizome won't, you know, the big, hard, woody growth isn't going to. But the roots, you know, the white fibrous roots that it sends out is certainly... And you can see it, you know, you can just, if you tip the planter on its side and look at the holes in the bottom, by midway through the growing season, you'll see that they're already out there. So, I recommend you start in a 20-inch pot planter, which is a big, big pot, and, you know, just save yourself the hassle of not wanting, because also trying to up-pot one of those things in the middle of the season, which I've done, you know, is a big pain, because you've got all the above-ground growth, and, you know, you've got to somehow pull that out of the ground and move it, and you know, it's just easier to set it up right, and you're going to save yourself a lot of hassle.
Yeah, if you've never seen hops growing, they're amazing, just incredible the amount of growth that they put on. What you mentioned potting soil, what can you use regular dirt or do you recommend a special potting soil?
Well, here's the thing: the person who asked the question about isn't this cramping the roots, they got the exact they've hit on the big problem with growing things in a container. Is, you know, you're cramping the roots and inhibiting the plant to its ability to pull in all the water it normally would and all the nutrients it normally would. So when you plant them, you need to put them in a medium that, you know, they're going to be able to get water, you know, from their surrounding matrix as easily as possible. And ordinary mineral soil, you know, the dirt in your backyard really isn't going to work for that. And it's the more clay is in it, the less and less and less it's going to work for that. You know, I recommend just ordinary potting mix that, you know, you get at any nursery or garden center. You can, with potting mix, you can, you know, you water the plant, and I recommend in the article, water it completely every time, water it until there's water running out the bottom so that you soak the entire matrix. And you water it like that. Excess water will drain out, so you don't have to worry about, you know, you don't have to worry about drowning the plant. So it gets good drainage, but it holds enough water that the plant can get a good drink when it needs it. And so, yeah, I really recommend on this using just everyday potting mix rather than, you know, mineral soil. I mean, potting mix costs, I forget, I was just at, you know, it's kind of expensive, relatively, especially when people think of it as dirt. You know, oh, I got dirt in my backyard, you know. But, and I mean, that's how I thought the first few years when I tried growing, you know, a lot of different stuff in containers, especially given how many containers I had. I thought, well, I'll just shovel some dirt from my backyard. But, you know, you want the plants to grow up nice and healthy. And, you know, hops will, once you get going, it's a perennial, so it'll, you know, you really only have to buy the potting soil once for that until you start splitting it and need more pots. But yeah, the potting soil is going to be completely worth it in terms of setting up you know, a matrix for the plant's roots to grow in with you know, excellent drainage properties.
Brad from Rhode Island asks, he's considering removing hops from his mother's garden. Can he transplant them into planters?
Sure. Yeah, just dig the rhizomes up in the early spring, and you know, you have, if you're taking them from an existing below ground source, I mean, you have the option of taking the whole crown, which is, you know, the whole you know, all or most of the big, you know, growth underground, or you have the option of splitting it up into, you know, when you buy rhizomes commercially to plant, they're like basically index finger size and thickness, you know, or a long, you know, big, like, kindergarten pencil size. you know, those big fat pencils from kindergarten?
Oh, yeah. You know, they still use those.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, you know, they're roughly that size. And so, you know, you can use that as a guide into how many rhizomes you can, you know, break a crown up into. Just look around on the crown for, you want to find places where it's going to bud. And those are easy to see because they're just, you know, they just look like little lumps on the rhizome. And yeah, so you certainly can move, you know, rhizomes from below ground planting to in a container.
And if you're trying to rid your garden of hops, be sure that you dig around quite a bit because, you know, the roots and the rhizomes and everything, they tend to, it's almost like bamboo, you know, it wants to spread.
Yeah, if there's any remnant of rhizome left in the ground, it's going to send up a shoot, almost.
Kading writes, do you need to bring the planter inside during winter? And will the smaller size freeze where, if it's in the ground, it won't?
It will freeze, but you don't need to bring it in. Hops can withstand freezing temperatures. You know, a lot of the hops are grown up in the, you know, the Willamette Valley or up in Idaho or in Washington, and, you know, the ground freezes there. If you, I mean, if you're living somewhere where it's going to be, you know, just ludicrously bitter cold for a couple weeks, you know, I'd maybe move it in a garage or somewhere where it's a little sheltered. But, I mean, I'm in Texas right now, so my experience with freezing isn't something that, you know, I can talk to most people about. We had one day this year that got below 30 degrees Fahrenheit. So,
wow.
And we've only had 3 days where it's got below freezing, you know, down to 31. So, but I think they'll withstand freezing pretty good. If you're doing it, like I said, if you're living somewhere and there's going to be a gigantic, you know, a very, very intensely cold period, yeah, maybe move them, you know, at least up next to the house, if not into a garage, or, you know, if you have a room inside, move them inside. But, I mean, the planters are big. It's not like you're going to be able to set them in the windowsill for a couple days or anything like that.
Deirdre from Sacramento, California, asks, what are the best climate zones? I assume they would be the same climate zones as those in the ground, right?
Yeah. If you're in the little belt of normal hop growing latitudes, you're golden. The nice thing about containers is it gives people outside of that belt, though, a little bit of latitude. For one thing, if you live up north where it's cold, although I don't think you particularly need to worry about them freezing, you might worry about them getting started ahead of time early enough, and, you know, you could move them to, you know, inside a garage where they still get some sun, or on a porch or something early in the year, you know, right up next to the house until they sprout, and then, you know, move them out into, you know, where they're going to grow during the growing season. So, you know, you could potentially, depending on what your situation is, use, you know, the fact that they're, you know, somewhat portable to move them, you know, warm early in the year and get them started. Likewise, in Texas, where I grow them, the big thing is the sun in the middle of the summer can be just brutal. And I have them growing where they get morning sun, but afternoon shade. And, you know, the pattern of sun and shade around your house is going to change as the year goes on, mm-hmm. you know, because the sun is going to continually, you know, start arcing higher and higher in the sky. And with these, if I need to move a plant so that it's getting, you know, shade in the afternoon or, you know, the sun hitting it early enough in the morning, I can do that.
Along those same lines of moving pots inside, Soil Boy from Burton-on-Trent asks, any benefits of trying to grow hops in a greenhouse? I have a big one. I assume he's talking about his greenhouse there.
Well, maybe he's just proud of it.
I couldn't resist. So greenhouse, are there any considerations of growing inside a greenhouse?
If you have a big greenhouse, I'd say go for it. You know, you'll need, if you use the sort of trellis system that I recommend, you'll need at least like 8 feet, or probably more than that, probably 10. You know, vertical feet of clearance overhead. But yeah, I would think, you know, whatever benefits there are to growing normal plants in a greenhouse, the same sort of thing would apply to hops. You know, especially if you live somewhere where you want to get a jump on the growing season, having them inside a greenhouse they're gonna warm up sooner and they're gonna sprout earlier in the spring.
And you have more control over the climate inside there.
Yeah.
John Chubik, who's been on the show from Illinois, he says, hops like to climb, but can they be grown from an upper deck planter and allowed to grow down? So say if you're, you know, in an apartment with a balcony or something, or if you've got a deck on your house and you don't want to go up, can you go down?
I've never tried that, but I just don't think it will work, just because simply the vines, well, technically they're vines, but the vines orient themselves upwards and want to grow that way. I mean, I think even if you forced, if you took a vine and like wrapped it going down, you know, part of a deck or something, I think the tip of it would just curl around and want to climb back up. Mm. You know, I don't want to say absolutely that can't be done, but I think it would be a lot of you untangling vines and wrapping them, you know, every week or so, and then having to come back and undo the the vine trying to climb back up itself, essentially.
Olo from Phoenix says he has second-year cascades in the ground, but where he lives in Phoenix, planters get too hot. Now, you live in Austin, or near Austin. Gets pretty hot there, too. So do you think that even in Phoenix you can do container hops if you take care of them?
Phoenix is, temperature-wise, I think even hotter than Texas. And I'm sort of at the edge of, you know, where being able to grow them comfortably is possible. I mean, I would say to him, if you wanted to try it, I would get a find a place where you get morning sun, but that you get shade in the hottest part of the day, and just be fanatical about keeping the pots watered. Mm. And of course, in containers, the larger you are, the better the water retention. The smaller ones, you know, dry out instantly. So, you know, go with, you know, probably a minimum with a half barrel size, or if not something bigger. Like, but one thing I don't go in the article, but you certainly could do, is, you know, if you got yourself some 2x6s and, you know, some center posts, you could build sort of a raised garden anywhere. Mm-hmm. And as long as you had, you know, I would say start with at least, I guess if 2x6 is 18 inches would be your first option. You know, at least 18 inches deep, and then at least, you know, 20 inches wide. And then, you know, you could go square, you could go rectangular or whatever. But you could try something like that, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for Tucson, I'd be interested in hearing how, you know, how well his in-the-ground hops do, and what their schedule of, you know, how much sun do they get all the time. That's got to be a challenging environment to grow them in.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas says, and I think we probably answered this, but can hops grow in planters indefinitely? Do they need to be transplanted at some point? We talked about every couple of years thinning the roots out.
Yeah, you want to break the rhizomes up every couple of years, or you're just, I mean, they're just going to get incredibly, you know, they're going to want to send up hot, you know, shoots all the time, and you're going to be dealing with that, and it's going to overly cramp the roots when the rhizomes start taking up, you know, more and more percentage of where roots would be. So, yeah, you want to take them out every couple of years and break them up and, you know, either plant them into a bunch of other planters, or, you know, if you only have room for a fixed amount of planters, you know, maybe probably try to give them the rhizomes away to other homebrewers or something.
Mm-hmm.
Sell them on eBay.
Yeah. Be popular amongst your homebrewing friends. Adam from Ann Arbor, Michigan asks, what's the best material to use as a lightweight trellis and that doesn't require footers and will fit on an apartment balcony? With trellises, you can pretty much use your imagination. The hops just want to climb, and as long as they can get some traction on whatever you're building there, you know, you can. The sky's the limit as far as what you can use. But what would you suggest?
The thing I do in my article is very simple and very functional. If not overly, it doesn't maybe look as sharp as it could. Although in the same issue, Andy Sparks of Basic Brewing fame has an article on how to make a really fancy hop trellis.
Oh yeah,
but I digress.
yeah, that's a he's all pumped about that. It's a good article, and I recommend that you, if you haven't seen the video episode with Andy's trellises, check that out. But Andy's got an article; he's going to be published.
Yeah, it's sharp. But what I do is I just go to the hardware store and get the 1x2s, little 1-inch by 2-inch by 8-foot stakes. They're like a buck a piece or whatever. And I mean, I've used those for years as the trellis for tomatoes. And in this case, they work just fine for hops. I stick them in the planter upright. I put a hook and eye in the top of them. You know, hook and eye is just a metal. It's got a screw on one end and then a round top. Put that on the top, and then just string the hop twine through that, and the plants grow up the twine towards the top of the thing. And basically, if you've grown hops before, you know that, well, 8 feet is nowhere near how tall hops get. They get, you know, 20 or 30 feet. So what you do on this adjustable trellis, the way I have it, is once it gets, you know, within a foot of the hook and eye, you just lower the twine a little bit, and then, you know, tie it off again and let the hop grow up, you know, the next few feet. And then you keep doing that. And basically what that does is you're always orienting the hop growing up, and it's always at about 7 feet over the ground. And you eventually, you'll get coils and coils and coils of the vine, you know, laying next to your planter. But that's fine as long as you keep it, just make sure it doesn't, like, stay wet. I mean, you know, if it rains on it, it's going to get wet or whatever, but just, you know, sort of, you know, the next day when everything else is sort of dried out, pick it up and shake out any moisture and, you know, look for, if you're somewhere where there are insect infestations, you want to look and make sure that the pile doesn't become a breeding ground for insects. But basically, a simple adjustable trellis like that is what I use on my driveway. And if you're on an apartment balcony, that would work pretty good because you should have at least 8 feet of clearance there. I mean, if not, you could cut it down and, you know, you're just going to be adjusting the trellis more often. But, yeah, I think that would work really well. That's a bare bones utilitarian approach. I mean, you could go with that basic idea and make a nice looking trellis too. But I mean, I'm growing these on my driveway in small town Texas, and you know, nobody cares. I don't care. So.
No neighborhood covenant to live up to or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm actually like in the middle of a what they call a historic district, and people are starting to spruce up things around here. So maybe in a few years, someone will come knocking at my door. And, the Bastrop Preservation Society or something.
Now, one thing that I found, I got like 5 pounds of wet hops from my Cascades last year, which blew me away. But one thing, after the first harvest, I kind of let them go. You know, I stopped pruning the new shoots coming up and such.
Right.
And they kind of went crazy, and they wrapped themselves around the posts. I have like 4x4 posts. And one thing that I found is that hops were growing inside that wrapping of the vines, and the hops that were inside that never got to see the sun were kind of pale and, you know, sickly looking. So that's one thing that you probably want to look out for if you're doing the coiling of the vines around on the ground, is that, you know, you might want to, if you've got hops, you know, that are undercover, you might want to like flip over that part of the vine or something to, you know, make sure everything gets equal sun.
Yeah, and you will. There'll be stuff trapped down there. And, I mean, what I've done is, you know, the top coil, you're always going to have sun on. And, you know, if you want to, you can spread it out or whatever. I've just sort of, I mean, I have enough plants that I'm not worried about yield. I just sort of sacrificed the ones that were, you know, perpetually shaded. Because you're still going to have, you know, 8 vertical feet of vine times, you know, 2 or 3 vines and all those hops, so... You know, if you're really gung ho to harvest every last cone, you could probably find some way to stretch the vine out and get it sun. But if not, you know, you at least have the option of not worrying about maximizing your yield that way.
Mm-hmm. So the vines do reach full height, growing
on
the thing.
Oh yeah, they you'll get. I mean, I get like. Most of mine end up about 30 feet when I measure them out.
Gosh.
But that's, I mean, that's Texas, you know, hot sun all the time, so.
Right.
And that's also probably the variety, probably the varieties I grow, too. You know, I'm growing the new American sea hops that are, you know, have pretty good agronomic properties. If you're, you know, growing some of the older German or English ones, you might not get quite that amount of growth out of them.
Yeah, I've got similar experience where, I'm going to give it one more year, but I may be an all Cascade hop farm here before too long. But one last question, one more from Kading. Will the flavor or bitterness be affected? So will the hop cone quality be affected by growing in a container?
It shouldn't. I mean, this is, again, a question that, you know, really to answer, you'd have to do you know, a scientific test growing, you know, and in fact, that's what I'm going to be doing this year.
coincidentally.
Yeah, coincidentally, but it shouldn't, you know, there's the plant's not going to know it's in a container versus in the ground. You know, with the exception of that its roots are cramped, but then you should be doing things to, alleviate that problem. And no, I don't think that you should have any problem. If you get, you certainly, when you do it right, you get the nice big, hop-sized hop cones. If you do it wrong, which I did in the first couple of years, you can get tiny little shriveled cones that don't do very well. But if you follow the advice in my article, you'll get nice big, hop-sized hop cones or bigger. And, when you pick them and rub them between your fingers, you'll smell all that, the nice hop. They'll smell just like hops. And, of course they should. There's the plant's not going to know that it's growing in potting soil in a container versus in the ground if you care for it correctly.
Oh, very good. Well, I can't wait till the next issue. And I appreciate everybody on Twitter again with your help. It's really making my job a lot easier. especially if we revisited a topic like this. I think we got a lot of good new information by people asking a new question. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate you once again, Chris.
Oh, thanks.
Well, thanks again to Chris Colby. If you click on the Brew Your Own banner on basicbrewing.com, you can get a free issue of the magazine. And if you decide to subscribe after reading that free issue, you'll be helping to support this podcast. Remember, we've got Brewer's Logbooks and our new Basic Winemaking Introduction to Wine Kits DVD out there on our online store. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our other DVDs, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Extract Home Brewing and Stepping into All Grain. You can check those out on basicbrewingshop.com. And you can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it in our online shop. Remember, we've got shirts of different colors, including white, which is also a color. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are TurboTax Deluxe Federal Plus State Plus E-File 2008. Ugh. And Lost Desserts, Delicious Indulgences of the Past, recipes from legendary and famous chefs. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We appreciate your support. We also have an associate link to the Apple Store and Audible on our site as well. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson down in Austin. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.